thank you for the invitation, and it's been a pleasure to really hear the discussion on so many different topics. So I'm going to bring the discussion back for a moment to topics that are important for urban planners and urban designers, and particularly the field of transportation, and talk about modeling pedestrians in a predictive manner. As many of you know, traffic engineering and traffic modeling has a long history in the United States, as well as many other countries. And arguably, the automobile has really been the technology that has most significantly changed cities in the 20th century. And as Emad was, I think, pointing out rightly in the beginning, is not only has the technology sort of led how cities have grown, but the analytics of mobility have also been largely directed towards automobiles. So every large research university has transportation departments that deal with mobility modeling, and I'd say about 90% of that effort has gone into modeling traffic. However, when we think about traffic modeling and traffic impact studies, an interesting feature of those is that generally we seek to reduce traffic, or we seek to understand how we can minimize through urban developments the impact of traffic they create on neighborhoods. On the other hand, when we look at pedestrians and active mobility modes in cities, then the reverse is true. Generally, we model them so as to increase them rather than decrease them through our developments. When we do an urban development, we'd like to have more pedestrians on the street rather than having more cars on the street. So this is something that I think deserves an equal rigor and attention in analytic modeling, and not enough has perhaps been done with geospatial analysis to model pedestrians, pedestrian behavior, and active mobility in cities. There are a series of benefits to pedestrians that have been well documented. There is having higher levels of pedestrian activity generally correlates with higher livability, social integration, sense of place. They're good for business, and so on. Even in the United States, the real estate market has now gone to a point where pedestrian-oriented real office space commands something like 70% rent premiums, and the market has sort of swung towards that side of mobility. And maybe at the more fundamental level, pedestrian experience of city space creates encounters in ways that are impossible at faster speeds. So many of you probably know the famous paper by Granovetter in the 70s, The Strength of Weak Ties, where he argued that it's really the weak ties, not the sort of family ties or the workplace ties, that bond urban societies or generally societies. And for instance, you're much more likely to find a job by through somebody who you meet twice a year rather than who you meet every day, that these sorts of ties hold the society together and create social ladders for improvement, etc. I would argue that pedestrians and cities are a big part of this. I mean, if strong ties are workplace ties or home ties, weak ties are places like this, conferences, you meet people that you meet once a year, etc. Then there's also latent ties, those sorts of experiences that you encounter in passing without necessarily even having a conversation, but it creates awareness and knowledge of each other in the city, and is an important glue that holds our cities and societies together, which is very different and distinct from, for instance, an environment that has practically no ties, where it's, you know, if you're purely an automobile-centric environment, you hardly even have any eye-to-eye encounter, et cetera, and don't even get those latent ties to develop. So bringing it back to pedestrian modeling, my research group, the City Forum Lab here at the Harvard Graduate School of Design, has been working for a number of years on using network modeling or network analysis to model pedestrians. So we typically take a spatial environment like a figure ground map here on the left and represent it as a spatial graph where streets become edges or links of a graph, and then intersections become nodes, and buildings or any kind of origins and destinations in the built environment really can be included as trip origins and trip presentations, destinations. So I'm going to only describe one particular algorithm that's well known in graph theory and how we apply it to pedestrian modeling, and skip some of the other network analysis things we've been working on. This algorithm is called the betweenness algorithm. I'm sure it's familiar to a lot of you, and it originated from Freeman in social network analysis. Essentially, the betweenness algorithm describes how central a node is to the rest of the graph. And in this particular application, this is sort of how central the Medicis in Italy, in Florentine families, were to the business networks of Florence at the time. But the algorithm is basically defined as the share of the shortest paths between all nodes that have to pass a particular node. So if you connect a shortest path from each node to each other node, then the nodes that are passed most often are the highest betweenness nodes. And it's widely practiced and used in many social network analysis, especially now that we have digital data on Facebook and others. However, adjusting this idea of a betweenness algorithm to model pedestrians and flow on city streets requires a few important adjustments. First of all, rather than connecting every node to every node in a graph, we need to take account of the fact that people are much less likely to undertake pedestrian trips to destinations that are further away. So even modeling a connection from every node to every node is not necessary, and we have to pay more attention to nodes that are closer to each other. This is a sort of a proof of that from a TRB study that shows that people's likelihood to walk to bus stop drops very quickly with distance, and at about 800 meters, very, very few people will undertake the walk to actually go to the bus stop, if we think about these trips. And it varies a little bit city by city. But there are several other adjustments that need to be made. I've just listed the ones that we've implemented in the urban network analysis software we've been working on. So first of all, rather than modeling flows from every node to every node, it's important to separate the origins and destinations of flows. So sometimes we just want to model trips from offices to, let's say, restaurants, rather than from everything to everything. And you can do that. Second, we implemented what's called a search radius. So rather than modeling trips, you know, at X distance across the city, we can truncate very simply with just one variable trips that are only, let's say, a mile long, and not worry about the rest. Third, we can weigh the nodes with important information. So rather than treating every node or every transaction as the same, we can give higher weights to something. So for instance, a big building would emit more trips than a small building, so we give it a specific weight. And maybe more substantially, the two last modifications, a detour ratio variable kind of opens up or relaxes the assumption in traditional betweenness metrics that people would take the shortest path. So we allow paths to deviate from the shortest, and people generally actually don't even know what the shortest path is. And even if they do, they often choose paths that are more pleasant, more interesting, simpler to follow, etc. So there's a certain probability distribution of how people walk, like was also shown previously with the Google pedestrian or routing algorithm for cars. And finally, we've implemented this distance decay function from the previous slide that I showed, that we allow the probability of trips to destinations to fall as distance grows, so that I'm not equally likely to go to a Starbucks that's 10 miles away versus one that's only, you know, 200 feet away from here. I'm much more likely to go to nearer destinations, like the Tobler's law that was cited earlier. So the outcome of this is a modified betweenness index, which contains these elements, and I'm just very briefly going to mention what they mean here. So the betweenness of a node I, or this can be a building or a street segment, at a search radius R with a detour ratio dr, is equal to the traditional betweenness index, which is the ratio of all paths, the paths that pass that node or pass that segment divided by all paths that are possible, times the weight of the origin node times the decay function. And in this graphic example, this is sort of displayed, and there's no decay applied here. But essentially, the way it works is that from any origin, and this is just one origin and this is one destination, we route X number of trips. And in this case, the number is 100, for example. And these trips can take the shortest path, but they can take any number of paths that are up to X percent longer than the shortest path. So there's a certain geometric probability distribution how they go, but you know they don't go here because this route would be longer than the allowable detour that we specify, which is empirically determined usually. And then every one of these paths here gets a certain betweenness value, or every one of the segments gets a betweenness value. In front of the origin, it is 100 because 100 people depart, and at the, in front of the destination, still 100 because in this example, I'm not applying a distance decay. The trips are not melting away because of distance. Everybody goes is the assumption here. In between, these values vary. And this is just one example with just one origin, one destination. This could be apply to hundreds or thousands of origins and destinations. And here I'm just showing very briefly one sort of case application of this, where we have several thousand origins. This is here in Cambridge at Central Square that many of you are familiar with. And here I show the origin weight. So all of the buildings that are up to 1 kilometer per 1,000 meters from the Central Square T-stop were included in the analysis. And what we modeled was peak hour foot traffic to the Central Square T-stop. So how many people we'd expect to be on what street during the peak hour. And the color coding means how many people start. So this is a combination of jobs and residents at the buildings within a 1 kilometer radius that emit trips. We apply this using the network analysis toolbox. And this is our prediction for every single street segment in the area, only including trips that come from jobs or residences and go to the destination, which is in this case the T-stop or the subway stop. So this is our very simple best guess based on where people live or where they work, how many people we would expect to see during peak hour on streets. And there's a few calibration factors that are important, but I'll skip. And so then we conducted a survey with actually students at all of these locations that have a tag on here. So we kind of tried to sample something like 20 streets or so in the area and did actual empirical pedestrian counts, how many people were observed during the same peak hour, and then compared it with our prediction. And this is the result. It's maybe easier to see this is the error on every single street segment, but the overall correlation was quite good. And this is only taking into account the home or workplace trips to the T-stop and ignoring any other kind of trip, for instance, home to a bar or home to another home, etc. This is only exclusively sort of transit-oriented trips. So what I'm trying to say is that with network analysis, it's actually very simple and straightforward to model pedestrians. We just simply haven't been doing a lot of that. And it's much easier to do so than, for instance, agent-based models that require a lot of calibration. We can set up a configuration fairly quickly and do our best guess estimate where pedestrians will be distributed. And the ultimate sort of goal of this work is to try to see if we can do it for new developments, for new master plans, things like the Toronto waterfront, but have an idea before we build things out how the project or development is going to affect pedestrian activity and active transportation on every street segment or pathway in the city. And I think this is a very timely issue we need to pay a lot of attention to today, because as you all know, autonomous vehicles are about to hit the market very, very soon. And we are, you know, facing an option of going back to the same paradigm and applying all of our creative modeling talents to modeling cars and their mobility, or making sure that we don't necessarily fall back to the sort of traffic paradigm of the 1970s and 80s, but instead use the best tools and data we have to also model the other kinds of mobility and ultimately contribute to types of cities that we want to see. So this is my last slide, just to explain that this also opens up other questions. It's not only a question of modeling where pedestrians are, but if we take a view where we try to have a transit-oriented and pedestrian-centric urban environment, then that opens up a trove of interesting research questions that build upon this data. For instance, we can model, are businesses going to be viable on certain streets given the amount of foot traffic we predict to have in front of them? Are parks going to have enough users? Can we set aside affordable housing where most people would need them within walking access to transit, et cetera, et cetera? And the application of the methods is actually very straightforward and quick, especially accessible to urban designers and planners. Thank you.